Hello and welcome to the Journalism.co.uk podcast. I'm Adelina Ciobanu and today's episode features highlights from our recent News Rewilding Focus Conference about social media search and verification in the newsroom. Earlier this week, journalists from across Europe got together at the Reuters offices in Canary Wharf, London, to discuss and learn about best practices, tips and tools they can use to find and verify eyewitness media in their reporting. The day kicked off with a keynote speech from eyewitness media expert Fergus Bell, who said news organizations working with user-generated content can and should be both competitive and ethical in their approach in order to build a sustainable model for the industry.
We're not operating in a world of beat reporters who are turning up at the scene anymore. We are operating in a world where if there is a global news event and there is global interest, global news organizations are going after that content. This is all about sustainability. If we don't do this right, then people are just going to turn off. They're our audience, they're going to turn off. We're going to lose their respect. They can see that we're not acting right. But how do you know, we need to be the first to the story, we need to do this. Yes, absolutely. But there are ways to be competitive and ethical at the same time. No policies that we could possibly devise around this would work if they're not competitive as well as ethical. And I think that it requires the industry to work together on that. There are certain standards that we can come to. There are certain standards that we've already come to outside of digital news, outside of social news. Just because this is new doesn't mean that we can't get together and talk about it, and stuff like this helps. We also have to appreciate that just because something is legal doesn't mean it's ethical. So yes, we can get away with it right now, but does that mean that we should? I think the next thing that we need to think about, the kind of rising trend in social news gathering, is news, social news before we knew it. So there's a couple of people out there. Dataminer is one that everyone knows of. That deals with Twitter. There's another one called Scoop Analytics, which is out of a Scottish university. And there's another one called Krasana. There are others out there. Krasana is very interesting. It doesn't actually have a news product at the moment, but it takes into consideration tweets and puts it into an algorithm to see if some news might be breaking based on keywords and topics. But it also does things like look at Wikipedia edits and combine that into the algorithm. So I think that is the kind of future of news before we knew it. And I think people need to start looking at how this works.
In an afternoon panel discussion focusing on contacting eyewitnesses on social media, Ina Kerr, managing editor at social newswire Storyful, said their approach is broken down into three core considerations: date, source, and location.
But ultimately, what is your responsibility to that eyewitness, to that uploader in that moment, who are often in vulnerable situations, in dangerous scenarios? And remember, they have never dealt with the media before. Very often, these are one-off eyewitnesses to an historic event, a news-breaking moment. So in Storyful, our model, just to kind of give you a quick overview, is around three core pillars: discovering the very best social media content, verifying it, and then publishing it out to the world's newsrooms. We go from a position of checking to corroboration to confirmed on each of these. And you'll see we do it a number of ways. We do digital footprint analysis. Does it make sense that this person is on the streets of Ferguson? You know, what is their Twitter profile, their Instagram updates, their Facebook posts been telling us? Does it make sense based on their social history that they are there witnessing this event? We will often use corroborating sources on the ground. Could be other professional journalists, could be other eyewitnesses, could be images and videos from a different angle. And then we'll always do, particularly with video, frame-by-frame analysis. And we're looking at every single clue in a video to try and help us bring us to the date, source, location. Could be looking at accents, dialects, the weather, landmarks, anything that is going to help us maybe go into Google Maps, Google satellite imagery, and go, that is that street corner, there's that shop sign, there's that street sign, that is exactly where he is telling us that image was taking place. This, however, only gets you to the point where you then have to actually go and talk to the uploader. So, you know, we've seen some of the tools that you can use to help do discovery and monitoring. You still have to do journalism. And I think, you know, I go back to the responsibilities opening slide. You know, a post, an image, a video, it's only a piece of information on a platform until you actually do journalism. So all of you sitting in the room here today, You know, we talk about traditional journalism. Well, is there really a difference between traditional and new journalism? No. Because what you still have to do at this point, with all of the technological resources you have, is still apply who, what, where, when, how, why. You still have to apply true journalism, good journalism, to reach out and have the conversation with your source. And remember, like all of us, I went around for years and years with a little black notebook of my sources, people I would ring and ring and ring to get stories. Our sources are just changing. Doesn't mean we treat them any differently. Like when you think back to your traditional sources down through the years, it was a relationship of trust, with a relationship of openness and transparency and fairness. It is no different now to treat an uploaders in the same way.
While the location of an image or video is an important element, Sarah Marshall, social media editor at the Wall Street Journal, said journalists should bear in mind that platforms like Instagram and Twitter show when the material was uploaded rather than when it was first taken. This is why in a breaking news scenario, her advice is to start out by manually going through an eyewitness feed to make sure the images are accurate and consistent.
The next thing to do in your kind of three-step verification process is to vet the source. Does the quality of the image match? So for example, if you take images like I do on social media and share images on Instagram, which are pretty bad photos, and then suddenly you see an image that's a high quality, beautifully composed photo, then you know you start to smell a rat. This person might not have taken the original image. And does the size of the image match? If most of them are tiny little images, and then suddenly you see a really high resolution, high size image, then that might be another clue that this may be not the kind of image that you're looking for. And has this person shared images from the same location? So we saw this a lot during Nepal. You know, we could kind of see whether the people who were there on gap years, who were there on holiday, they'd shared images from the similar locations in the days previously, and we were pretty sure that they were on the ground. Unlike if this is the first image that they share from a location, then your old journalistic skills kick in, and you're like, this seems a little bit unlikely. And then the other thing you can do is look at the other social profiles. Can you find any other social media profiles for this person? Do they have a YouTube account? Do they have an email address online? Do they have a Twitter account, an Instagram account? Do those accounts put them in the same location? So back to the example of the Kathmandu gap year students, you know, you could imagine the kind of student who spends a year in Kathmandu and they're going to be sharing pictures on Instagram, videos on YouTube, stuff on Facebook, so that other social media profiles will have positioned them in that location. And the other thing to kind of flag is searching like an eyewitness. This is a slide borrowed from Joe Geary from Twitter. When a news event happens, then as journalists, we might type a tweet that says, helicopter crash, Clutha pub, Glasgow. When somebody witnesses an event like that, then they're probably going to do WTF, fuck, bang, or crash, or something like that. So these kind of expletives as a search in tweet deck can be very useful rather than necessarily kind of the language that you might be thinking of immediately to search.
But how do you search for user-generated content in closed networks such as WhatsApp, Yik Yak, or FireChat? Mark Franco, assistant editor for social news at the BBC's UGC Hub, said sharing material in this way is a common practice among people, and gave the example of the London riots in 2011, where users' first instinct was to communicate using BlackBerry Messenger rather than Twitter.
What if you are dealing with images where there is no public API, where there is no fire hose that's available to you of that information publicly available, where you simply cannot get stripped down the metadata from an image or a video, look at how people are using it publicly, or where things are blocked or unavailable? Sometimes it's about joining a group, befriending the right people. At other times, it's about thinking about private chat. Can you, either on an individual basis or on behalf of your company, look for ingenious ways of befriending or getting inside those groups? But we have to get much smarter at getting inside these networks. That could be setting up individual accounts, having a named journalist in your team on location, because it has to be on location in this instance, saying instead of trying to go around taking photographs of everyone and trying to interview everybody, that they're going to try and get onto FireChat and share stories, share images, share messages, and then circulate that and bring that back to base. There are lots of other message boards that have become popular for lots of the wrong reasons. Ask FM developed a bit of a reputation in the last year, 18 months, particularly in relation to quite sinister messages that were being posted on this anonymous message board, often by jihadists or jihadist recruiters. Now, there's a lot of stories that were being done at the time about how Ask.fm was policing this material, what could be done to stop it, and so forth. I think one of the things that journalists perhaps weren't asking was, if you were seeing this information, and of course this is all publicly available in the sense that you could join these message boards, you could get involved, how could we use them? At the BBC, we got a team of people to work on a series of profiles of people from this country who were travelling to Syria to be jihadists, and tracking them in terms of their journey, what they were doing, and where they were coming from, and so forth. This kind of information proved quite useful to us in many ways, because we could begin to actually develop a bit of a database of knowledge around the way in which people were passing messages to one another. So, yes, it's sinister. Yes, it's often pretty unappetizing stuff, but it can also be quite useful to you. But you have to think about how you can do, how you can surface it, how you can illustrate it, what kind of storytelling you can do through it.
If you'd like to find out more about the discussion at NewsRewired in Focus, check out newsrewired.com for written coverage from the day, as well as video interviews with speakers and audio from the conference. Thanks for listening to this journalism.co.uk podcast.